Everybody.
Good morning, everyone. Profusely apologize for the late start with you all. We did have some...
Tammy's fixing it.
Okay, can you hear me?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, apologies for the late start. We did have important business to discuss with our assistant AGs who give us legal advice, so it was really important, and we appreciate your patience. So we're going to get right into the subject that you all feel very strongly about that is on our morning agenda. That is item number 10, Puget Sound Shrimp Policy Review. And this is a briefing. This is not a decision meeting, but we will have public testimony. So we start with Rich Childers, and he's going to give us the briefing, and then we've invited panels to prepare in a more organized fashion than is allowed during our public input sessions. We typically only give citizens 3 minutes each to testify during our public input on items, but because of the importance and controversy about the shrimp policy changes that are before us, we've been asked and agreed to allow constituents from the sports side and from the commercial side to organize presentations to us in a panel format. And those will take place right after Rich finishes his presentation. The first panel will be the sport panel, and then the second panel will be the commercial panel. Then after that, we'll take a short break and come back and listen to the rest of the testimony. I've been asked to remind everyone that if you want to testify, we need you to fill out the testimony forms at the outside table. I think we've got about 13 people who've signed up so far, but you can sign up. We'd like you to sign up now, if you would, if you want to testify. And during that portion, you will be given the standard 3 minutes. So, okay, let's get going here. Rich Childers, our Puget Sound Shellfish Manager, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Commissioners. For the record, my name is Rich Childers. I am the Puget Sound Shellfish Manager in the Fish Program for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And before I jump into this presentation, there's one housekeeping, just as in the other presentations. There's Tammy's going to distribute to you right now a packet that contains the most recent language, and these are dated, so you can keep them in order in the notebooks. It's the most recent draft language for the policy, the most recent versions of the four options that are under consideration for the spot shrimp fishery, and a copy of the presentation that I'm about to give. So if this goes into your notebooks, you will be up to date as through today on the discussions and the draft policy language. So today, presentation is somewhat of an overview and a continuation of this policy review process that has been underway since June of last summer. We will be presenting our final analysis on the spot shrimp fishery management options, a quick review and discussion on the coastwide spot shrimp catch, and kind of a final look at the policy review schedule. We're kind of coming into the final stretch here. There was slight changes in the draft policy language, a little bit of tweaking of some language that I will talk about in this presentation, and then the management options in a bit of detail for the spot shrimp fishery. So this kind of shows a snapshot of the coastwide spot shrimp catch for the tri-states, California, Oregon, Washington. And as you can see, in Puget Sound makes up about 50% of the coastwide catch of spot shrimp, partly due to because of the protected waters of Puget Sound, lend itself to a pretty accessible fishery. And we have a very strong commercial treaty fishery, as well as the recreational and commercial state fisheries. Looking at our schedule, that line down at the bottom has been moved from the top and is slowly working its way down to the bottom. Now we're down to the November commission briefing and public testimony. There's one more commission meeting scheduled on this, and that's in December, and that's when we will be asking for to take action on the draft policy language, as well as selecting a management option that will be inserted into the policy for the spot shrimp fishery. So, looking at the major policy elements, we do have language that we are now all comfortable with, I think, for conservation measures and direction in the policy for protecting the resource. And the second bullet has some language that was modified since the last discussion on this. And I'll just read it. It says, manage Puget Sound shrimp fisheries conservatively until fishery impacts, and the two words, to localize populations and stock abundance, are better understood. Those two words, localized population, was inserted in there. Talking with some of our advisors, there is concern that with the shift of the policy, there could be some localized populations that may be at risk, the easily accessible areas particularly. So we're committing to, regardless of how the policy turns out or the spot shrimp fishery management options, we're going to monitor the best we can through test fisheries, log data, and so forth to make sure that we're not overly impacting localized populations to the best of our abilities. And then the third bullet is kind of on those lines as well. We're going to continue to look at stock assessment and biological information to track the health of the resource. The policy obviously defines recreational and commercial allocations for spot shrimp and the non-spot shrimp fishery. And we have a single line entry, couple lines, sentences in the policy that deal with the non-spot fishery. It's pretty simple. It's a straight across allocation that we have agreement to by both of the user groups, advisory groups, on how we will manage that. And then we're going to, obviously, we have our harvest objectives between the state and the tribes. That's right up front in the policy. That's kind of a number one mandate. And then there's language in the policy, the draft policy, that supports a buy-down program for the commercial pot licenses and a process for also working with stakeholders to convert trawl licenses, which are five of them out there, to a pot license for just non-spot shrimp. So the language that's in the policy basically commits us to working with stakeholders to pursue this, is the way it's worded. So we're not committing to saying it could happen or it will happen. We're just saying we will work with stakeholders to explore those options. So we have, right now, there's, for the last couple of briefings, there's four management options on the table for the spot shrimp fishery. The first option is a status quo from what it currently is, which is a roughly 50-50 between the commercial and recreational. There has not been a lot of discussion on the status quo option, and it's been carried through this whole process as somewhat of a reference point. I mean, we can look at the 2012 fishery and so forth, but the discussions have really focused in on options two and the recreational advisor's recommendation and the commercial advisor's recommendation. Now, option two, and I'm going to have a couple of slides that go into more detail on these options, but option two, in summary, provides 65% of the spot shrimp quota, the state's share of the quota, to the recreational fishery. And there's language in that option that says, and I'm going to read this, that the commercial and recreational allocation within regions 1 and 3 will be adjusted, and there's some new language in bold there. It says annually or in season by equal percentage points to ensure the Puget Sound general allocation objective of 65-35 is attained. And that's basically that annually or in-season language was inserted in there, because as we went through this process, we're thinking, well, we do have quotas that change over time, and we could have a situation where there's an over-harvest of one group or another. And what we're saying is, in-season or annually, we will make adjustments, but only in regions 1 and 3, the northern, the Strait of Juan de Fuca, San Juan Islands, to meet that overall objective. So I don't want to overly complicate it. It's somewhat of a simple process, but that gives us that flexibility to do that both in season and annually before the season starts based on what happens with quotas and so forth. It's focused in on regions 1 and 3 because regions 2, 4, 5, and 6 and Discovery Bay are 100% recreational. So there's no adjustments in those. The recreational advisor's recommendation is similar to option 2, but they are recommending that 75% of the state quota or state share be allocated to the recreational fishery. And their language below for balancing in season and annually is the same as option 2, allows us that option to adjust regions 1 and 3 in season or annually to meet that 65 or that 75-25. I passed this by the Recreational Advisory Group, that language, and they're supportive of it. They're okay with it. They think it will work. The Commercial Advisor's recommendation provides us 56% of the state quota to the recreational fishery, and they are advocating for no adjustments. It's just a fixed regional allocation between the two user groups, and regions 2, 4, 5, and 6 in their option are also 100% recreational, but they're saying let's just go with a fixed percentage for recreational and commercial in each management region and go with that process, which we could work with. So the regions I've been talking about, I always include the regional map as in this handout so you can reference it. We work with these every day, so we kind of know them by heart, but it's in your packet if you want to refer back to it. So here's, again, kind of a summary of the percent allocated to the recreational fishery by management option, and you can see it by region and by option. And I kind of regroup these a little bit differently from what you've seen in previous presentations. I grouped regions 2, Discovery Bay, and regions 4, 5, and 6 at the top, because if you look at options 2, then the recreational advisors and the commercial advisors, they're all advocating for 100%. And those regions go to the recreational fishery. So the discussions really go down to the bottom two rows, which are what is allocated to the recreational and commercial fishery in regions 1 and 3. And you can kind of see the difference there. Option 2, it has 65% will go to the recreational fishery in region 1. And 15% in region 3, and then you can just read across it. For the recreational advisors, 90% of the state share in region 1 would go for recreational fishery, and 30% in region 3. The commercial advisors, 20% in region 1, 12% in region 3, and again, all those options, 2, recreational, commercial, all have 100% in regions 2, 4, 5, and 6. I hope that makes it a little bit easier to read. We kind of debated on that, but I think, in truth, the discussions are about regions 1 and 3. So this shows the projected recreational harvest and commercial harvest for each option, and this is based on the current quotas that were in 2012. You've seen this slide a number of times. It's been in all the presentations since June, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. It's there for reference, but you can see down at the bottom for each option, if the quotas didn't change, what would be allocated to each user group poundage-wise. This is something we spent some time on, and they are projections, but it's how many recreational days would translate from each option. And again, these are projections. We're trying to predict human behavior and, of course, weather and so forth. The cost of fuel all weigh into that. But you can see, again, that in the options two, in the recreational and commercial, they don't change that much in regions 2, 4, 5, and 6. They're very small number of days that are a lot because those are small quotas. And the real difference lies in regions 1 and 3. Of where the days change between the options. This shows the total number of recreational open days for all regions and the projected number of days. So you can see since 2003, these are there was 317 total harvest days in all regions in 2003, and the number of recreational days has been declining over the years due to increased participation. And then at the right, where the area is kind of blackened out there, you can see for options 1 and option 2 and the recreational and commercial advisors how many days we are predicting would translate in for the recreational fishery and for all regions combined. We also took a stab at estimating the number of angler trips and what value, that attaching a value to it. And you can see in the table, it's option 1, all the 4 options, how many angler trips we're estimating for each option and what the total value is estimated. And that's the values coming from the economic analysis of the treaty and non-treaty commercial fisheries in Washington State. The publication, I think you're aware of, that was published in 2008. And again, these are based on 2012 quotas. If they didn't change, and based on these options, no quota change, this is how many trips we're estimating. This is shows the commercial catch since 2003 and what their projected catch would be per management option. So you can see there's been a pretty steady increase in the commercial catch. This is primarily due to their fleet fishes a lot out in the Strait of Juan de Fuca in areas where the recreational fishery has limited participation. And we've had pretty robust quota increases in those areas that have benefited the commercial fishery kind of by default because of the low participation of the recreational fishery. And then what we project their catch would be based on the 4 options. So obviously option 1 is a status quo. It's going to be up around 125,000 pounds. And then option 2, it drops down to about 90 some thousand pounds. And then you can read across the recreational advisors only allocating 25%, and their recommendation of the commercial drops their catch down quite a bit. And then the commercial advisor's recommendation is the 56% option takes them back to about 115,000 pounds. This is the same graph, but it's the ex-vessel value that have been corrected for current dollar amounts since 2003. It's the same pattern. You'll see the ex-vessel value is increasing from 2003 through 2012 because of that increase in catch, because of those quota increases, primarily in the Strait of Juan de Fuca area. So, what are our next steps? In December, we're going to schedule a meeting. It will be not a briefing, it will be an action item. And we're going to ask that a spot shrimp management option be adopted by the commission that will be inserted and incorporated into the policy. And we're going to ask for an action item on adopting revised policy language. And I will take questions.
Any questions for Rich? Commissioner Schmidt.
Thank you, Chair. Commissioners. Rich indicated there were some slight changes in the policy itself. I think you pointed those out, but could you identify them again? Plus, is the policy to be reviewed on a certain period of time, like every 5 years? or is that a decision for the commission itself?
That would be a decision for the commission. The previous policy or current policy that's in effect right now has language in there that says the policy will remain in effect for a minimum of 5 years. So it didn't have an automatic review. But there's nothing in this policy right now that has any trigger points or for a review. And to answer your first question, I guess it's on the back page, the second bullet down. I'm going to read it. It says, manage Puget Sound shrimp fisheries conservatively until fishery impacts to localized population. Those two words, localized populations, are new. It used to read stock abundance are better understood, but we, because of the concern that we need to take a look and continue to make sure that we're not overly fishing on some isolated, maybe isolated might be a better term, populations.
Commissioner Perry?
Yeah, I was wondering as you went through that, Rich, if you do run into a conservation situation with a population someplace and you need to, in season, need to cut that back, how would you do that? Say it was in area 1 or 3 where you had both commercial and recreational.
Yeah, unfortunately, and I don't think it's a big problem, we would not catch it in season. We would be catching it. The bulk of our test fisheries, we do some pre-season just to monitor the health of stocks, but most of them are done when the fisheries are done. We go in after the quotas have been taken and look at what's left in the grounds, basically looking at a catch per pot. So we would see the effect of reduced abundance maybe to a critical level after the fact, and then we would take action the following year. And we also pick that same information up in commercial logbook data. And that's a tool that we use for, you know, looking at quota adjustments, both up and down.
So the quota would still remain the same for whatever the decision of the commission was for the quota. That would still remain the same, even though you might cut back in a certain area.
Yes, and we're hoping we won't have to do that because restricting the commercial fleet to specific beds or areas is a pretty easy task. But the recreational fishery, if we had areas that were over-harvested, let's say, or down, very suppressed. We've done it in Discovery Bay is a good example. We closed that bay for a couple of years, and it will recover. So what we would do is if we saw where there's an area where the spot shrimp levels were down, let's say, less than a half a pound per pot, number one, we'd probably go back and double-check that before the season would open, but probably take some action to not have fisheries occur in those areas. Very similar to what we've done several times in Discovery Bay. If we see very low abundance, we just, this treaty fishery and the state fishery agree to keep it closed for a year or two, and it tends to rebound.
Thank you.
Okay, other questions for Rich? Comments?
We're discussing something, yeah. Go ahead.
Anything else? Commissioner Mankin?
Yeah, not right now.
Okay. Nothing else? All right. Excellent job.
Yeah, I do have a question.
Commissioner Mankin?
In the existing policy and in the new policy, under regional management strategies for the spot shrimp pot fishery, it states that the management intent is to provide for meaningful and stable recreational and commercial fisheries, and to focus the commercial fishery in the areas that are less accessible to recreational fishers. Then there's the word shrimp that appears in it, but that's not my question. My question is, if we're able to find previously unexploited populations of spot shrimp in those areas that are now inaccessible to recreational fishermen, but that the commercials can get, do we have an opportunity to increase the allocation, the overall allocation, then for the commercial fishery?
I think the quick answer to that is yes. However, there's always some caveats. We have done in past years, in recent years, what we call exploratory fisheries. We had in collaboration with the tribes, where we go out and really looked at all areas of Puget Sound, like where are some areas where maybe there are spot shrimp resources that aren't being fished. And there were no surprises in that. Basically, what we've determined is the areas where these fisheries are now occurring are where the spot shrimp resources are. In fact, there was some areas in the Admiralty Inlet and so forth, we thought there has to be some spot shrimp there, and we put lots of gear down all over, and this caught very low, like maybe one shrimp. So the shrimp, they tend to localize on beds, right? And we know where these beds are. You know, they're on the banks and so forth. And the ones that are there that are now being fished are pretty much it. I don't think there's any unfished areas. That said, those areas out in the strait, Smith Island, out in the banks where the recreational fishery is not occurring, we are monitoring those not only with logbook data, but we're doing ride-alongs on commercial vessels and collecting data there. And working with the tribes, we have been somewhat baby-stepping these quotas every year up and up, and then we check to make sure, you know, we're still keeping it a fair adequate number of females on the grounds after the fishery. So I anticipate those areas are going to continue to increase in quota, at least for the next couple of years.
Thank you. Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Rich, nice presentation. I've got a couple questions. Can you give us an indication of the trend for the next 5 years in terms of the growth opportunities that both stakeholders would have?
That's a tough one. I can predict, I think, in this coming season, 2013, we will probably see overall a state quota increase by somewhere about 10 to 20,000 pounds. Beyond that would only be speculation. We've already had some discussion with the tribe, particularly out in the strait, where again, we've increased quotas, but we're not, the catch rates at the end of this fishery are still pretty phenomenal. So we're going to be, again, stepping up some quotas there. But I don't want to try to predict beyond the next year or so.
But there has been, it looks like there will be some potential for growth.
Yes. Yes.
Back to current levels in future years, possibly.
Yes.
The other question is, if we want to look at a 70-30 model, would it be difficult for you to get us the numbers, how they'll split out? We're not restricted to just these numbers that we have here.
A 70-30?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can bring that back on the table if you're requesting that. There was a 60-40 and there was a 70-30 a few months back, and those two were merged into the 65-35, so we already have data.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
But I think this last time we met, we wanted to see what would happen at a 65-30.
Yeah.
We could go back and pull that data off those and use
right.
that as our policy.
If you look in the notebook or commission website, which these are all online, at that September meeting, you'll see a 70-30, and it has number of recreational days, projected harvest. It does not have X vessel value impacts to the commercial fleet, but it has the days, the pounds, and so forth, and that's in that September presentation.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure everybody in the commission knew that there's more choices or numbers than just there. And my last question is, I didn't quite follow all of the buyout situation you had there. Could you enlighten me on that?
Yeah, what we're thinking of is there's two commercial license reduction programs that we're going to explore. One is to work with stakeholders, and it would be funded through a tax and perhaps even working with the recreational community, maybe some on the recreational license, but we're not there yet. We've just started that conversation, but particularly with a commercial landing tax. that could go into a dedicated fund, very similar or maybe exactly like the commercial urchin and sea cucumber fishery, where they would have a tax on their landings that would go into a dedicated fund that would be designed to reduce their permits. And they've talked about reducing down somewhere around 13 permits or so from 18. So not a huge reduction, but to offset the impacts of maybe a loss of harvest opportunity. So that's one. The other one is there's five trawl permits out there right now, and three of the permit holders have expressed interest in converting their trawl permit into a pot license that would only be good for non-spot shrimp. So we have a pretty robust non-spot quota out there that isn't being fully utilized, so they would be able to just basically convert that trawl license. They'd no longer trawl with it, but they'd be able to fish with pots for the non-spot resource only.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rich, I'd like to follow up on Commissioner Duvier's comment for just a second. And regarding that 70-30 consideration, could you do a model based on what you just stated previously about the increase in allocation or increase harvest opportunity of approximately 20,000 pounds that you're predicting will be available over the next 12 months, primarily in Area 3 and primarily in the commercial fishery, so that we can look at those numbers? I think that would be helpful. You can't go beyond 1 year, you're saying, but
right.
1 year you can do.
So let me repeat back what I think I'm going to hear. We're going to have the current four options. I'm thinking about what we're going to come back in December with. The current four options, and I'll make this available to you before the December meeting. Current four options, we're going to pull that 70-30 option, put it back in as an option, and I'm going to make a speculation that we could see about a 20,000-pound increase, particularly in the Strait of Juan de Fuca, or I'll look and see if maybe it could be other areas, and then model it according to that, assuming there'd be 20,000 pounds additional state share.
Added. That would be helpful.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'll provide that to you real quick, early next week, but then I'm going to put it in the presentation for the December is, right? Okay.
Yeah.
I have to be clear on that.
Yes.
That's going to be a decision meeting. So. Yeah.
And if and if your crystal ball allows you to take it out longer than 1 year, that'd be of interest as well. But
because those increases have to be negotiated with the co-managers.
That's right. And we have proposed increases, and they've been rejected, and vice versa. Yeah.
Commissioner Perry?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm concerned about the shrimp resource, and I wanted to get into the biology a little bit. Usually wildlife or fishery populations are finite, and you keep increasing the amount of take out there based on your data. Is the general population increasing, or are you simply taking small steps and taking advantage of relatively steady production out there, but do you feel you can take more of that and still maintain the resource over time?
What it appears to be, and it's very similar to crab, and I'm kind of stepping out on a limb here because a lot of this is speculation, and the commission has tracked crab over the recent years. It appears that there's some environmental conditions out there, or maybe some shift in the predator-prey chain out there that seems to be favoring crustacean resources, and crab and shrimp in particular. What we're seeing is I think the abundance that we're seeing in some of these areas are, I'll use the record, but I don't really know that, but I certainly we're seeing some of these areas that even though we've been increasing the quotas, we go out and do test fisheries or looking at the ride-alongs at the end of the fishery, and just tremendous amounts of shrimp still left on the grounds after the quotas have been taken. So I think we're similar to crab. What we're seeing is we're seeing this resource is climbing in abundance in Puget Sound waters, Hood Canal included. We're seeing, to give you an example, in Hood Canal, after the quotas are taken, 160,000, 170,000 pounds from the canal, we'll go out in September, and in our postseason test fisheries, we're seeing catch rates, catch per pots, higher than what we've seen in previous years if you go back in time before the fisheries. So some areas, 10 pounds per pot after the fishery closes. So, and this is why working with the tribe, we're kind of baby stepping, because if it starts reversing, we want to be able to pick that up. And if it starts reversing, we will reverse also. We will start backing off of those quotas. It is not a one-way street. We reevaluate them every year.
And just one more question, and I don't want to get into this in any detail or anything like that, but it's a little bit confusing to me when we talk about Puget Sound recovery and water quality and the fact that we've got to do something with Puget Sound, yet we have a fishery like this that is expanding all the time. Is there any kind of connection there at all?
I sit in those same meetings and actually get asked, what are you doing? Exactly those questions. What are you doing with crab and shrimp? And I have to reply that from the crab and shrimp resource perspective, they're doing fine. So it may be what's harming these other species is favoring these. But yeah, it's we're keeping an eye on it. I think it is we monitor this pretty closely. And if there's a problem, like when we pick up in Discovery Bay, we can take action and we'll just close areas down. But right now, it's somewhat phenomenal what we're seeing in terms of the abundance of shrimp in these areas.
Thank you.
Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Richard, if I remember correctly, I think there's 16 commercial licenses, or users, 18 licenses, but 16 users. Is that? And do all of those users have the ability, equipment-wise, to catch in the strait?
You could hold that question for the panel, probably. I would answer yes to that, but they should confirm that. But you're correct. There's 18 permits held by 16 individuals right now, and they structure their fishery working with us on weekly trip limits. That's why, you know, they actually predict out how many weeks and so forth. But I believe I know, and they'll probably speak to this, that hiding from the weather when it blows and maybe in the strait, they need to be able to go to Region 1 and so forth. So can they fish out there? Yes. But they definitely, they're in very open water out there, and running gear in some of these conditions is kind of tricky. It's not just being on the boat, but I would recommend you ask that question to the panel.
Good segue. Thanks, Rich. Great job, as always.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move into the first component of the testimony is going to be by the sport panel. I'm not sure who you are, but I think you know who you are, don't you? Okay, here they are. All right, I've got the list now. The recreational panel is made up of Ron Garner, Gordon Rue, and Brent Hackney. We need another chair at the front desk.
Let me get that chair.
That one, because I got the easy one. Okay.
Well, thanks for organizing yourselves and presenting information for us.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
We're not going to read.
While we're doing that, I'd like to thank all of you for letting us come and talk about our policy today. Gordon and I and one other were advisors 10 years ago, and pretty good recreational shrimpers, I might add. We've We've enjoyed being able to work with Mark and Rich, who've been great, and they brought all the information, and so thanks to the chair, director, deputy director, and all of you today for hearing us. So what we'd like to start with is I'm here representing one of the recreational advisors, Puget Sound Angler State Board. I'm the president of that. CCA, Fish Northwest, NSIA, and the recreational community. And we want to tell you who we are today. Here's a great slide to start out with. We're generations of families that have been taking resource or using our resource to our best abilities in the Puget Sound. We live in an area that's unique, probably nowhere like it anywhere in the world, at least from my point of view. I've been to a lot of places, and I don't think there's a better place to live. So anyway, moving on to the next one. We have great days on the water. You can see that for all ages. This is just astounding that we can go out and harvest shrimp for our recreational community. All ages, everybody can participate, and there's a vast amount of shrimp out in the Puget Sound Straits and San Juan de Fuca. Next. Okay, where else can you go out and get something such as a nice, huge bunch of shrimp like this and have a metropolitan area in the background? Close to home, it just creates nothing but happiness and great times. And to the next one, memories. So making memories is what it's all about, lifelong memories for our kids and grandkids. And Lisa came down and talked to you a couple of times, Hegel and her husband, Russ. I don't think anything more needs to be said. Picture's worth a thousand words. So here's a snapshot of opening day. This is Hood Canal. This is a great picture of what it does for our communities. Next one. Here's another opening day flyover. You can see how many boats are out there, how many people are out enjoying the shrimping. Next one. And then we start getting into the meat of what's going on. Puget Sound largest boating events. Anacortes Fish and Derby estimates 600 boats on the water on the opening day. Everett Coho Derby, 752 boat estimate. Lake Washington opening day boating season, 2,500 boat estimate. 2012 opening day of shrimping season, 2,626 boats estimated. The single largest boating day in Washington. And even Seafair, we didn't put Seafair up there because we thought their numbers were too low, but it still was very much bigger than Seafair. So are you ready, Gordon?
I think you got this one.
Oh, I'm still up?
Yep.
Okay, go ahead. Okay, why we're asking for a change in the current Puget Sound shrimp policy. Some regions, such as 4 and 6, are down to 1 to 2 days a year. Other regions, such as one, the San Juans, have gone from 6 months to 6 days of fishing per year. Recreational historical catch share has decreased from 75% to 50% of the resource, which in 1995, we were 75% of the resource. 2003, with the new policy, we dropped to 60%. And with the language written, without an overall allocation percentage split to adjust back to keep the percentages the same, we've dropped to 50, and it's going to continue to go on without the policy change. Recreational fishing organizations endorse fee increases in exchange for expanded fishing opportunity. We had a lot of us came to the department, and when we were going to lose fisheries, we said that we would step up and endorse fee increases to not lose fisheries, but on the other hand, we wanted expanded seasons, which have been done. So thank you for all of that. Recreational shrimping is an immensely popular sport with increasing participation each year. Increased recreational share enhances safe fishing on the water. So people can, if they have more days, they can pick their days. And a couple years ago, you probably saw that there was a couple of deaths out there. Some people went in probably a not-so-outfitted boat and went out and got into weather, and they went down and two people drowned. By having extra days on the water, people can pick and choose their days to when they could have a little bit nicer day. If it's bad, they're not forced to go. Recreational fishers are not only harvesters, but are also consumers who share the resource with their family and friends. So basically, when we go out, it gets consumed here, and I think that pretty much says it all itself. That should be it. No. A larger share of the spot shrimp resource should be enjoyed by families who live and work here in Washington State.
This has been previously highlighted, but we want to run through just real quickly the steps that we've worked with staff over the last few years to help lengthen the duration of the commercial fishery, or recreational fishery. The first one here is the reduction in bag limit from 10 pounds to 80 shrimp. And why that's important is in some areas, 10 pounds equated to approximately 160 shrimp. So those areas saw 50% cut. Other areas, maybe 120 shrimp. So, you know, a 30% cut. But there's been significant cuts in bag limits in order to lengthen the season. Maximum pot limits of 4 per boat, again, to even out opportunity and preserve the maximum season length. We opened all regions now on the same day. Previously, we'd opened different regions on different days, but this spreads out participation and, again, helps with the equation of lengthening the maximum number of days on the water. We've decreased the hours of fishing to 8 hours in marine area 8 through 11 and 13, and only 4 hours in marine area 12. So that's Hood Canal is marine area 12, 4 hours. That's only open from 9 to 1. Some years it's 4, 5, 6 days of fishing. Most years it's only 4 or 5. So we're only talking 16 to 20 hours total fishing time in Hood Canal. Increase the mesh size in shrimp pods from 1/2 inch to 7/8. That helps promote juvenile shrimp escapement. Depth restrictions were put in place after the spot prawn season closes. So sport angler, when the season closes for spot prawns, we have the opportunity to fish on non-spots. The depth limit, what that does, the non-spots are typically in shallow water. With that depth limit in place, it keeps sport anglers from inadvertently fishing on the spot prawn beds. We removed the minimum size limit to reduce handling mortality. Now, used to be there was a minimum size trying to measure your shrimp. Now it's you can take the first 80 shrimp. And we've supported biodegradable escape devices to, and that's an important factor when we talk about derelict gear. So we have commercially caught shrimp follow the money. Mostly the state and or the country and go to California, the East Coast, British Columbia. As Ron's already mentioned, recreationally caught shrimp are consumed locally while providing a quality outdoor family event. Shrimping is a group activity. Family and friends get together on the boat. Again, maybe 4 hours, maybe 8 hours. It's a short time, but people typically get on their boat and stay on the boat during the day, duration of the day's fishing. So license fee comparisons between the recreational and commercial, attributing only 3% of the shellfish combo license sales revenue to the shrimp fishery amounts to $250,000 to WDFW. Now the total pot of money generated by those license sales is about $8.3 million. So 3% is just $250,000. On the commercial side, 18 licenses. Each one of those 18 licenses pays an annual license fee of $290. Total fees generated by the state commercial fleet for pot fishermen, $5,220. So you can see from the pie chart there, about 98% of the revenue flowing to the state to support the fishery is coming from the recreational side. Here we broke it down a little bit differently. 134,500 pounds of shrimp caught recreational equals $1.85 per pound in license fees generated back to the state. On the commercial side, $170,943 of shrimp caught commercially, pounds of shrimp caught commercially equals 3 cents per pound going back to the state in license fees. Now these totals here are both for both spot and non-spot shrimp. One thing Rich mentioned earlier about the lack of recreational effort out in the Strait of Juan de Fuca, I have to take issue with that. This is a day out fishing on my boat. You see, I was not alone. We're more than able to fish many areas of the Straits as long as we have weather that cooperates. In 2002, recreational fishers paid $7.62 per shellfish seaweed license, and that was to harvest crab and shrimp. Today, we are paying $25.05 license for the same privilege. While our license fees have tripled, the total days of shrimping have decreased by 81% over the last 10 years under the current policy. Now, this was a slide that Rich showed earlier. You notice the numbers are a little bit different. What we did is we took the $43 per angler trip that Rich used, we went back to the department and got an inflation-adjusted number. 43 was for 2008. The inflation-adjusted number is $49 per angler trip. You can see there that the total value of the fishery is roughly $2.3 million. But as probably anybody in this room that actually fishes for shrimp can tell you, those numbers are based on a crab fishing trip. Shrimping is an incredibly expensive pursuit. Is it twice the cost of a crab fishing trip? I can't say that. But I can tell you that that $2.3 million figure dramatically understates the actual economic value of our fishery back to the community. And it's important to know where this money goes. It's not going to Boeing. It's not going to Microsoft. It's going to the small businesses that really make our fishery happen, the manufacturers, the sellers of tackle, the boat repair places. I mean, it flows directly back into the people of the community. Okay, this is a chart, awful lot of numbers. We just borrowed one of Mark and Rich's chart from a previous previous presentation on their part, but first I'd like to look at the numbers right down there at the bottom, 75 and 25. That's our position. And there's a number of ways we came around to developing our position. We look at a lot of different kind of parameters, but one of the things we looked at, and Ron already mentioned this, was that in 1995, the recreational share of the fishery was 75%. And at that time, our catch, or our quota for the recreational side, was over 200,000 pounds. Commercial side, they had 25%, they were about 65,000 pounds. That was in 1995. 1996 was the first year of implementation of the Rafiti decision, which gave the treaty tribes one half or 50% of the harvestable shellfish. Both sides took a tremendous hit on that. Our fishery was basically cut in half. The following season, 110,000 pounds or so. Commercial side also took a hit. Under our proposal here, in 2013 will be the first time that the recreational and the commercial side are at parity with their 1995 levels. We both took a hit. We both will be back up to our 1995 levels. But there's a big difference in those two fisheries. On the commercial side, there's a fixed number of participants, 18 licenses, 16 individuals. Over the 17 years from 1995 until today, we've added literally tens of thousands of additional anglers. And even with the bump in quota we'd have under our proposal, we'll still be 3% below where we were in 1995. Okay. With this map, obviously you saw it before with Rich's presentation, but we want to highlight those same two areas that Rich talked about, regions 1 and 3. And why are they so important to us? One, because that's where the resource is, and two, because that's where we're going to see the greatest increase in recreational effort. Now, when it was mentioned earlier, hasn't been that much recreational effort out in the Straits, Region 3. Well, look what's happened. Over the last 10 years, we've gone from 172 days down to 68 days. Our proposal calls for 136 days of fishing there. If the same trend is likely to continue, if the policy has a duration of 5 years, we'll probably be down to half that 132 days in 5 years. The word is out. The Straits used to be a hidden secret. Nobody talked about it. But now with the internet, with this presentation, with word we've got back through PSA and other organizations, more and more people are heading to the Straits to fish. Up in Region 1, over the 10-year period, it went from 65 days down to 36 days. Our proposal call, or excuse me, down to 6 days, 65 to 6 days, our proposal calls for 36 days of fishing. Over the 5-year duration, I assume that this policy will be down to 18. If it goes 10 years like the current one has, we'll be down to 9. So our proposal has factored in the continued interest in recreational fishing. We've seen it before. Those trends are likely to continue.
Hello, Commission. My name is Brent Hackney. I'm a recreational shrimp advisor. I'm also a member of the Snohomish County Marine Resources Committee and a member of the Snohomish County Public Health Advisory Council, and environmental public health is my background. And recreational shrimp fishing is one of my passions. Let me get to that page here with the chart that's sitting up on top.
Do you want it in order?
Yeah. Okay, there's a chart here, if you'll notice. It shows from 2002 to 2012 the trends in recreational fishing days and a trend in commercial harvest, shrimp caught per pounds per commercial license. And if you notice the statement in the middle in the blue, from 2002 to 2012, there was an increase of 87% in pounds of spot shrimp per commercial license, while the recreational shrimp fisher had a decrease of 81% in shrimp fishing days. Okay, the next slide here shows what the harvests are, the current harvest and the proposed harvest out of a pie chart. Currently, the recreational harvest is 17% of the shrimp resource, and then the 83% includes the tribal and non-tribal commercial harvest. In our proposal, we'll have 25% of the harvest, while the commercial, tribal, non-tribal will have 75%. Recreational fishers support the derelict gear removal programs. This is something that I've been involved in the Snohomish County Marine Resources Committee with crabber education. Something that was started clear back in 2005, and we joined forces with the Department of Wildlife in 2010 and expanded that in 2011. It's something that I would like to continue with the shrimp fishery, starting a shrimper education through the Marine Resources Committee and hopefully partnering with the Department of Wildlife if possible. Starting this year, additional fees were added to the recreational fishing license to help fund derelict gear removal programs in Puget Sound. Currently, this fund has generated almost $100,000 to help the cleanup effort. Puget Sound anglers and other organizations have contributed many thousands of dollars to Northwest Straits Commission for cleanup. Coastal Conservation Association was instrumental in working with Congressman Norm Dix to secure a $4.6 million grant to remove derelict gear from our local waters. Our collective group supported legislation that required tagging of commercial gear and mandatory loss reporting. PSA, CCA, Fish Northwest, and NSIA wrote a joint letter in support of funding NOAA and EPA's effort for the cleanup of derelict gear. And then just last night, PSA had a meeting, and PSA Snow King, and I'd like to mention that they donated $4,000 to the Northwest Straits for derelict gear removal, and that money will be matched 10 times over to the Northwest Straits for derelict gear removal. And our position, we support the 75-25 allocation. And as you can see on the last slide here, we got some youngsters enjoying a great day out shrimping. We hope that there'll be future opportunity for our young generations. Thank you.
So, that's it. Huh? Great. Good job, guys. Do we have any questions for the panel? Thank you. That was very clearly done and nicely argued. So, good job.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Thanks for listening to us today.
Okay. All right. Then we can call our commercial panel. And the commercial panel will be composed, I Ken Cruz, Brent Andrich, and Joe Verdes.
Morning, Commission. My name is Joe Verdes.
Did you have a PowerPoint, by the way?
No.
Okay, then can we take this one off? Yeah.
We can't afford it. My name is Joe Verdes. I'm a commercial fisherman from Puget Sound, and I'm the nominal president of the Puget Sound Shrimp Association. Ken and I find it handy to switch off every once in a while, depending on who needs to do something. So, but I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to speak to you today. This is good. I'd like to start off by just looking to a paragraph from 2000 policy statement from the Fish and Wildlife Commission. I'm not going to read a whole lot to you, so don't worry about that. I'm not going to go down. But it was written by Dick Burge in the year 2000, February 4, 2000. And they worked on the policy at that time. And the number two item in it was the clause allow for growth in the recreational fishery in existing policy, November 1996, was removed and replaced with the maintain a quality recreational fishery. Of course, they had the foresight at that time to see what was happening is that the expansion of a recreational fishery was going to impact the commercial fishery. And that's exactly what we're talking about today. I've heard a lot of things from a lot of recreational people, but I've never heard any of them say how this is going to impact their commercial fishery. That doesn't seem to be a concern of theirs, and it is a very big concern of mine. I sent you a letter with my personal economics in it to give an illustration of what it's going to do to an individual fisherman. We've caught more, yes, they have caught more as well. That's the thing that's not demonstrated. I've taken college statistics, and I know how to look at things like this. And when you put a graph up that chops off the bottom 6/10 of a graph, things look exponential when they really aren't. They're a lot leveler. So I think there's enough scientists and people who've had in the past that they understand that that is true. So those are exaggerations if you look at a graph a particular way. The other thing, economically, I've got a bachelor's in business from the University of Washington and a master's degree in economic studies and third world development at an Australian university. I know a little bit of economics, and I know the TCW review of economics is not to be used for comparison between commercial and recreational fishing. It says so directly in the first paragraph of the study. I have it back with me. Do not use this study for comparison between recreational and commercial. So, the reason is because it doesn't take into any account the impact on commercial fisheries. It doesn't establish well what the commercial fishery is worth, nor its impact into the community. I can show you, too, where my fish goes into the community. I can take you to Beacon Hill, and where they're sold live out of the market there. I can take you to Black Rock Seafood, where Tony sells them that, too. And I can tell you my plans next year to sell them in Pike Place Market. These are going into the consumers of the state of Washington. Not the 3% of the state of Washington that is commercial recreational fishers, but the whole of the state of Washington, which owns this resource. We want to go with a 60-40. The 56% is an aberration of sorts. It tried to take into account for a buyback program, and nobody seemed to really be talking about the buyback program. It didn't seem to be gaining traction. So the 56% for recreational in our proposal doesn't really mean much. We really want to go with a 60-40, which is what we were historically set at as a protected industry by the state legislature. RCW set us up as a different industry. Not many industries are protected. You can't go to Quickie Lube or someplace like that and find that they're listed in the RCWs as an established business and that how many people can have them and that too. We were set at a particular reason because there was a Derby fishery before, it was overcapitalized, and it was affecting the resource. They took us down to an economically sustainable level with 20 permits, which was reduced down to 18 permits by the time it came out of the emerging fisheries. They set it there for a reason, because they believed it was viable for the resource and it was viable for the fishermen. To go below the 40% that they set in the 2000 level would basically be taken out of our pocketbook and making us less viable. I've tried to demonstrate that in my numbers, and if you have any questions about my numbers, what it will do to me, what it will do to my ability to supply, to support my family, I'll welcome them. I'm generally a private person. I don't like showing people my numbers, but I had to basically show you at that point, this is what it's going to cost me. You're taking me down. The 49% to 40% I can understand, because that is where the policy in the past was written incorrectly. You know, because it didn't take account for the huge increase of Region 3. But we didn't know that then. We do now. But to go from 40% to 35% or 30% is to impact my pocketbook directly. And while that may not seem important to you, you are so told by state law that you're supposed to look after my interests. They created me for a reason, to supply consumers. They created me for a reason to handle the consumer side of it. There's another thing about the tax things. I have to take umbrage with some of the numbers put up by the recreational people. It doesn't show our value. It doesn't show the fact that the state of Washington encourages us to ship them out of state. In the B&O taxes, I don't know how many people run businesses here, but if you have B&O taxes and you sell something outside of the state of Washington, you don't pay your B&O taxes on those, because you bring net money into the state of Washington. It's an economic benefit for the state of Washington, much like selling a Boeing jet to China is. It changes the trade balance for your home area. We are doing that, and we're doing that with the encouragement of the state of Washington. So don't penalize us for doing what the Washington State Legislature encourages us to do. That said, a number of us market locally, farmers markets, local retail outlets, and numerous other places, and we do it in a strategic method during the summertime, which includes the peak tourist season. The peak season when local people are actually going out and supplying food for their cookouts. I can't talk as long as the recreational guys go on. I'm sorry. I just don't have that much to say. But my point is that it will harm us. And please adhere to the 60-40 that has been set before, that has been set up as a viable fishery, and will keep us going. Not only are recreational fishers increasing, but consumers are increasing. And that's another component of the state of Washington that doesn't take into account very much. I'll pass the baton on here to Ken.
Well, obviously, I'm also for the 40-60, sharing 60 going to the recreational. And I know at the conference call you guys had at the last commission meeting a couple weeks ago that there was some discussion of giving 65% to the recreational fishermen in Region 1, and then an 85-15 split in the Straits or whatever. We're not looking to take out of the recreational fishery to achieve that 40%. I mean, they're talking Hood Canal, and we know that we are compromising by giving all the Southern Puget Sound, or not fighting that, you know, all the protected waters, and we'll be relegated to fishing the Straits in Region 1. Well, there's a problem with Region 1 that maybe nobody has thought of, except I thought of it. There's four basic spots in Region 1 in the San Juan Islands that the recreational people are able to fish, and that's the west bank of Susha Island, it's fairly protected, Spiden Island, west end of Spiden Island, Jones Island, and Parks Bay. That's where they traditionally fish. Well, since, for the last 10 years, since the last policy, it's been an 85-15 split, 15% going to the recs. These are small areas. Parks Bay and Jones Island and Spiden are like bays. They're small areas. They're maybe half a mile by a quarter of a mile where the shrimp beds are. So since the last policy, at 15%, that's 7,000 pounds of shrimp that the recreational people have harvested there. So if we go to 65%, like was mentioned by the commission on the conference call in Region 1, that'll bring it up to 30,000 pounds of shrimp harvested from these basic four areas that are relatively small. And my concern is, it's not like crab where we're fishing past breeding prime males. We're fishing the future of the fishery with basically 3- and 4-year-old females that are the future of the fishery. So we take 30,000 pounds out of these four areas. What's that going to do? Well, in my mind, having fished all of those areas, it's going to wipe out the fishery in the San Juan Islands where the wrecks fish. My proposal is to draw a line from Jones Island to James Island where the initial quota was set 10 years ago, 12 years ago, and that initial quota was set from the commercial catches in Boundary Pass. There's a tremendous resource in Boundary Pass. The currents there are strong enough where the wrecks have a tough time fishing. So my proposal is to allow us to catch 62% of the Region 1 quota in only exclusively in Boundary Pass, not to fish at all where the recreational fishermen normally fish or where it's easy for them to fish, which still is 150% increase for the recreational fishery in Region 1. And I'm hoping that it makes some sense to not wipe that resource out with overfishing by the wreck fishery, to go, you know, from a 7,000 pound fishery to a 32,000 pound fishery in Region 1. It's, and fishing on the future of the stock, you know, the reproductive females, it's not good management. And then, so what happens after that? I'm not sure, but I think that fishery would be done in a relatively short time, maybe a year or two. I'm also concerned about the Region 3 split, and hopefully, you know, with the amount of work we've done, the ride-alongs, the logbooks, I mean, we've increased that quota out there. We've proved there's a lot of shrimp out there, and the recreational fishery hasn't really had a lot of interest out there, no interest out there till we proved that there was a bunch of shrimp out there. And now, you know, with the 75-25 split that they're talking about, it just seems like we've done all this work, we've put in all this time, we've worked with the department, and we have to give that up, or it sounds like they want us to give it up. So a lot of the stuff that they're talking about is areas that we've already conceded the South Puget Sound to give them 100%, and then, you know, more in Region 1 to increase their number of days. I'm really concerned about the Region 1 stuff. I don't know if people have thought about wiping the resource out up there or not. Probably not, just more concerned with number of days. So, to give some consideration to watching out for the resource up there is probably my number one priority. Go ahead, Brett.
Brett Andrich. I too want to thank you, Commissioners, for this opportunity and this panel discussion. The commercial fishers are not opposed to modifying the current policy
to stabilize the initial 60-40 allocation intent. What we can't understand is the additional step of cutting the commercial share, especially after we have spent years working together with fishery managers in a responsible, respectful, and cooperative manner to increase the opportunity for everyone. We feel that 60-40 is equitable. Things have skewed due to things that weren't envisioned in the policy original. We do need to make adjustments to that. We acknowledge that. Our small commercial fishery is a model of sustainability, responsibility, and stability. With a limited number of permits, our industry have chosen to further improve the fishery by implementing the following. We chose to implement 600-pound weekly limits. This allowed us to have an extended season, and it's supplying premium quality product. Rather than the extremely short, intense derby-style fisheries of the tribes, our season lasts for 2.5 months. This provides us with a much longer opportunity to supply the state's consumers. We have implemented diligent in-season cooperation and weekly communication with the fish managers. We provide important information and we contribute to managing the fishery. We've actively encouraged and promoted the opportunity for managers and biologists to do onboard ride-alongs during the season to collect valuable catch data. We have instigated biannual commercial advisor meetings with the department for both pre- and post-season evaluations of the fishery and of the resource. We went to the extra effort of contacting Canadian fishers, biologists, and their observers, and to learn how they manage their fishery and what kinds of things can be applied to our fishery, looking to try and improve the resource that we have. Through all of this additional effort, cooperation, and commitment to the resource, the prawn quotas have been increased, and they've been increased for everyone. All user groups have benefited. These are the actions of a responsible and committed user group that should be an example for doing it right. I've been on the board of directors for the United Southeast Alaska Gillnetters. I've worked together with North Pacific Fisheries Management. I've worked together on the board of the North Pacific Longline Association. I've never been involved as what I consider to be a co-manager with management on a level like this. The sharing of information, the respect, the give and take with the department and our advisors group has been phenomenal. It's a model. It's something that should be held up to the world as this is how it's done right. If you contrast that with the recreational group, you will see that they've met with the department only once every 2 to 3 years. They certainly rallied the troops for this, and they've certainly met a lot more here in the last couple of months with this review. Now, all of a sudden, there's a lot of interest here. The recreational effort for prawns has exploded in the last few years. There's no question about it, and it's resulted in less fishing days. But they have shown an unwillingness to consider responsible limits, such as reducing daily bag limits or their effort. Their solution? Give us more. When contacted by us before this whole process started, to get together and work these things out collectively, we were rejected. After the commission meeting where we sat here with all of you in September, we again extended our hand to the recreational advisors. We were again spurned. We just want more, is what our impression is. The recreational lobby does not show any indication of an interest in trying to balance or manage the fishery. They just want more. We believe there should be an effort to balance the 60-40 allocation, the original 60-40 allocation. We think it's equitable. We think it's reasonable. We do not think it is appropriate or reasonable to further cut the commercial fishery. This is our livelihood. This is how we feed our families. This is how we pay our mortgages. In my case, I have two college kids. This is how they are helping put themselves through college, is by fishing with me in the summer. To reallocate in the direction of 65-35, which has been the impression that we have received that the commission appears to be headed, is going to create hardship for our group. I urge you to reconsider the path you appear to be on. It's possible to balance the allocation of the 60-40 policy. It's extremely complex. There's many, many implications from every little decision. But if we put together something such as a joint task force to work together to try and balance all these issues out, it's possible to come up with an equitable plan. Thank you for your time. We're happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you all. Good job. Commissioners, question? I think there was a question about, what was it? Someone had a question that Rich suggested we pose. Is that you, Commissioner Duvia?
Yes. Thanks, Madam Chair. The question I wasn't sure of, if all the license holders were able to fish in the straits, did they have the right equipment and processor? I know it's fished a little differently, a little deeper, weather's a little tougher.
I know of one fellow for sure who's going to be really distressed with Region 3 only. He sells to farmers markets, and it's in Snohomish County and King County. He has a large enough boat to survive it out there, but he doesn't like it out there. And it's going to impact him a whole lot. We can't afford really large boats. You buy the boat you can afford for the fishery you're fishing. So I don't have a 100-foot boat. You know, most of our boats are about 35 feet, and they're substantial boats. They have a diesel engine, you know, too, and they're not generally fast. We can, for the most part, we can do it.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Commissioner Perry.
You mentioned that selling shrimp outside of Washington, maybe even outside the country, is a trade balance issue that is basically positive. And do you have any estimate at all on how much of the commercial fleet's shrimp are sold in Washington and how much is sold out of Washington, approximately?
I don't. And I'm not being evasive. It's substantial, but I don't know. There's some people are 100% out, some are 100% in.
I see.
And individually,
it's a whole range.
Yeah, it's a whole range depending upon what each individual's marketing scheme is. Kevin Neihardt sells his entirely to farmers markets. I'm split between local markets and out-of-state markets itself, probably 50-50. I'm planning to sell more of them in-state. That's my plans. If I can continue with my plans, I've worked with the Pike Place market, and they said, okay, you can sell in there. It's going to be a tremendous market. I just got to find somebody boots on the ground to do it for me, which is I spend a lot of time fishing. If I'm decreased, I'm going to have to look at those plans again, too, and just go for something else. It's just, I can only supply so much. in that case. But there are local markets that are, farmers markets are taking off in our communities as well, too. And those, we're beginning to supply those. I know Kirk Keller sells in off the dock in Anacortes, and he sells off the dock, sells in farmers market in Anacortes. Keith Porter sells in Roche Harbor, 100% in Roche Harbor. You know, so
I had one other question. Is on the commercial fleet, is all the fishery through pots, or is do you use some other method to
100% pots
to get shrimp? It's all pots.
It's all pots. Yeah.
It's all pots.
Yeah.
Okay. And other varieties, they use other methods.
There is a trawl fishery for non-spot shrimp, that of which there are five non-spot trawl permits,
okay,
which are the ones that Rich referred to earlier that were giving consideration to a shift over.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'd like to clarify one gear difference between us and the wrecks, and I talked a little bit about the high current areas and the rougher weather, like in the Straits and in Boundary Pass in particular. We use, it's a buoy, it's a long line system, buoy line. Then we have like 50-pound anchors on one end. Our pots are strung, 50-pound anchor on the other end, and a buoy line up. So we have, our gear is anchored down on the bottom. The recreational fishermen are only allowed to fish single pots. So what happens a lot of times in the high current areas, especially like Boundary Pass or in the Straits, they throw their pots over with too big a buoy, it pulls the pots away. The derelict gear thing that they were talking about, the cleanup, which is great, is 100% recreational gear that was lost. We don't lose our gear. It's anchored to the bottom. It's, you know, it's a commercial type fishery that really effectively we can only fish those high current areas. That goes back to my point about allowing us a quota in Boundary Pass and giving the wrecks an exclusive area in Region 1 that's protected in the lower current areas where they can effectively fish. We could fish there too, but they can't effectively fish where I'm talking about in Boundary Pass, where the initial quota for all of Region 1 was first set. So just a little explanation on the gear and why I'm thinking that we're not threatening the recreational fishing areas where we're proposing to fish, the Straits and Boundary Pass, we would fish there exclusively. All the rest of Puget Sound, including those areas in the San Juan Islands, which are low current and more enjoyable to fish, more protected, they can have it. There's enough resource in those two areas to allow us 40%.
The breakdown for that I think we failed to adequately summarize, to come out to an equitable 60-40 split, basically boils down to 85-15 in the Straits, which Rich has diagrams have shown to all of us, and 62-38 in Area 1. That balances out right at about 60-40, with the recreational fishery having all of South Puget Sound, and then those percentages in those areas. As things change, as it goes on in the future, in another 5 years, maybe we need to look at it again. It's not bad to have a policy review. This one was appropriate. It was imbalanced.
Okay, this is a great discussion, but we do have a time constraint because we have a meeting with the governor at 1 o'clock. We have to have lunch. We have about 45 minutes, or no, more like 55 minutes of testimony from individuals who have signed up. We've got about an hour before we have to take our lunch break. So can I ask the two commissioners who want to ask questions to be very brief, and then we'll move right into public input rather than having a break.
Yeah.
Commissioner Jennings?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize for not being here for the first part of the presentation. I have been engaged in this topic and looking at the information we've been receiving. Just wanted to compliment the three of you for the testimony you gave us in writing at the end of October. I have looked at it carefully, and it matches a lot of what you said today. And one of the points, Ken, that you raised that does resonate well with me is a question of, within Area 1, what actually is available functionally to the recreational community to harvest. And I'll be following up with Rich and staff to sort of explore more the point you raised about if it really is, if we're looking at it from a pound perspective, how does that translate on the ground from where the harvest can actually be taken by the recreational users, which is a major point you raised, which I do think is an important consideration for the final decision. So just wanted to say we're listening and thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Kenney?
Thank you. Just quickly, can you explain your position on the fixed regional allocation versus the recreational adjusted annual or season allocation, and also an option two?
Absolutely. There are so many implications and confusing things that happen by trying to balance this entire fishery statewide at 60-40, at 10-90, at anything. Anytime we try to balance the entire thing, well, what happens with this area when this does this, or this area does this, and you twist this knob over here and it changes this? The whole idea of regional allocation is to make it simple. We decide, if you want to use our example, the 62-38 in the islands, the 85-15 in the straits, then we created a very close to a 60-40 overall split. And by not trying to manage that throughout the entire state, it's simple. If something happens, if there's a... It's our understanding that the tribes are promoting for a big increase in Area 2 this year. If there's a big increase in Area 2, the recreational fishery rises. We don't have to worry about trying to balance out the commercial with Areas 1 and Area 3. It's simple. That area has its regional allocation. It stays that way. If there's a big allocation in Area 1, we do it in Area 1. It's simple. It's clean. There's no worrying about trying to balance everything out. It all boils down to really simple. It's simplicity.
If there's an over-harvest in one area, say, for instance, the wrecks were over-harvested in 8182 by, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 pounds, well, that has to transfer into the Region 1 or Region 3 quota, so that poundage would be taken off the Region 1 quota, plus a percentage of that would be taken off the Region 3 quota, and then we rebalance it the next year. So they're going to lose some quota in that area in Region 1 or Region 3. If there was an imbalance and they over-harvested with a regional management of 1,000 pounds, let's say, they have to meet that obligation with the tribes at 50-50. So if there's, say, a 10,000-pound quota in 8182 and they catch 11,000 pounds, the following year they pay that back. So instead of a 10,000-pound quota in that area, they get a 9,000-pound quota in that area. As opposed to changing the percentages in 1 and 3, it's complicated for an overall management, and then you throw the caveat of in-season rebalancing into that. It looks like a nightmare to me. I mean, regional management is simple, straightforward. There's no advantage that I can see for the commercial fishermen to have regional management, but it should be a lot simpler for the recs. And I think if you ask the guys in charge, they'll probably tell you the same thing.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You did a good job.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move right into the public input. Once again, the commission rules are that each person gets 3 minutes. We'd like you to come to the front table, speak kind of a few inches from the mic, and when you hear the beeping noise, that means that your time is up, and we'd like you to conclude your remarks to make time for everyone else. So I'll call you up two at a time. That makes it more efficient. The first person is Dan Stauffer, and the second person is David Martin. Would you please come forward? Hey, Mr. Stauffer.
Good morning, Commissioners, Director, Deputy Director. Thank you for this opportunity. For the record, my name is Dan Stauffer, and today I'm representing my employer, Ed Surplus and Marine of Linwood, Washington. The panels did a very excellent job, and my notes have been torn to shreds, so please bear with me a little bit. I've served on the License Dealer Advisory Committee now for over a decade, helping the department smooth out our electronic licensing system and keeping trends of who's buying what. Shrimping is getting more popular every year, but it's not just shrimp and crab. It reflects a growing interest in all shellfish gathering. And when you saw the families of the shrimpers in the presentation, those same families continue to go on to dig clams and harvest oysters and look for mussels and enjoy all of these wild lands and continue to spend money. And the shrimp is the kickoff to that entire summer season that the families in this area enjoy. The shrimping has been getting so popular that as part of my seminar packages I give at the store, the last May's shrimp seminar in 2012 was my 10th annual, and I get new people every year, I get repeat people every year, they bring their kids in, they grow up to be licensed buyers, and they then bring their own kids in later. In the 12 years I've worked at Ed Surplus, I can't tell you how many young folks I've watched grow up, get married, bring in their own youngsters, and pass this on. This is the continuing life of the department and how we're going to keep this going. In my classes, I really stress the faults the recreational fishery has in this shrimping, and that we will continue to go to the same spot and hit it over and over and over again until the resource is impacted. And I teach them that we can't do that. Unfortunately, with the very short seasons, are you going to waste your 4-hour opening going away from the known spot to try to find a new bed? Our electronics are getting better. We have the ability to see some of these shrimps. So, you know, we do have the ability to not impact the resource if we train them properly. Another thing I am always stressing in all my classes is how to properly set these pots, that they can be lost. We need to balance out the weight with the buoys, we need to watch our drift, and we need to make sure we don't lose our gear, because a shrimp pot is, you know, $60 to $130. There's 400 feet of line and numerous buoys that you're out several hundred dollars if you use a shrimp pot setup, and then it does continue to fish. So I sell more replacement gear for lost derelict gear than I do to people getting into the sport, and I would like to flip-flop that. And I spend over an hour in every class just teaching people how not to lose this gear and to properly set it and to avoid gear conflict with the shrimpers. The last part would be, if we could avoid opening shrimping on these big monster minus tides, it would also reduce that gear loss. Thank you.
Thank you. Wallace Cogley, would you come forward, Mr. Martin?
Hi, my name is David Martin, and I'd like to thank you, Madam Chair, and Commissioners, and Department staff for having this time. What I'd like to address is the shrimp policy's impact on public safety. In the last 2 years, we've lost 2 family members, not personally, but shrimping, because they've been forced to make poor decisions based on weather, tides, and the size of their boats. The other thing that I've seen is the ramps and the support staff from the Coast Guard to the Fish and Wildlife officers are exceeding their capacity for these opening shrimp days. When I'm out shrimping and I see some of the conditions that the boats that people are taking out shrimping, it's really not safe. And they're trying to maintain their family history of going shrimping, and When you have a minus tide and you have the winds kick up, anything under 17, 18 feet really shouldn't be on the water, but they're out there because they want to have, that's their 4 hours or 8 hours to go shrimping. I'd like to sort of think of it this way. If the grocery store was only open 2 days a week for a certain amount of hours and it was a first come, first serve, how would you do? Another example is if the Seahawks only had 2 home games the entire season and they were first come, first serve, no seating assignments, what would that look like? Well, that's what shrimping is starting to look like, because the ramps have exceeded their capacity. The abilities for people to get on the water has exceeded the capacity of the ramps and the facilities. We pay a lot of money. I know the $49 that they use for shrimping, I can't start my boat for $49. I mean, I look at probably $100, $120 a day. And so take that number times 2 or 3 times. We're talking $5, $6, $7 million that goes into this sport, into this. So what I'd like to do is hope that you support the 75-25. That would be the most beneficial, not so much for the capacity or the economics of the shrimping, but for the safety of the people that partake in the shrimping. That's all I have.
Thank you. Ron Chase, are you there? Okay. Mr. Cogley.
Madam Chair, Director Anderson, and gentlemen of the Commission, thank you for this opportunity. I'm representing myself. I happen to be the secretary for the Snow King CCA chapter and for the Snow King PSA chapter. I don't envy you all your job, but thank you so much for doing it. You are very appreciated, and I'm sure at times that it doesn't come across. Now, to my points, as you might guess, is this coming to work?
It's a little close. You don't need to be quite that close. Yeah.
Is this better?
Good.
Okay. I do support the 75-25% allocation, and I support it for two reasons. The economic benefit to the state, we have gone over this and over this, and as sportsmen, we are absolutely integrally concerned with the proper management of the natural resource. And so I do take umbrage with one of the comments that was made that essentially we're too dumb to plant the gear in a way that it won't be lost, so 100% of the loss is ours. At $100 to $300 a unit, don't you believe for a minute, I don't know that the tide is going to take it out if I plant it in the next spot. In that regard, I would like to see all commercial crabbing out of these marine areas, 8, 1, 8, 2, 9, 10, 11, 13, and of course already in 12, and use the increase in potential catch limit in the Strait and in Area 7 to equitably increase everyone's proportion of the catch. It's been averaging about 20,000 pounds additional in the Strait each year since 1995. At that time, there was a 75% share for sports fishing. But the Strait is harder to fish. Upper part of 7 is harder to fish. I can't go there in my boat more than about once in 3 days because of the chance that the winds are going to come up or we're going to get that. These guys have boats that will handle the heavier water, so it makes sense to fish the heavier water and not have to deal with private boats getting in the way who don't understand the needs of these guys. And by these guys, that is not a negative term. I just don't know their names. But commercials have a spot. Recreational fishing has a spot. But recreational fishers, by and large, I know you can find a jerk now and then. We really are concerned. I pay to come here, and I don't make a cent by it. I care, and so do the people I know. Thank you.
Thank you. Merle Harrett. Okay,
morning.
Mr. Chase.
Yeah. My name is Ron Chase. I'm a Snohomish County recreational sportsman, and I served on the Shrimp Advisory Committee. I'm here again to support the recreational advisors 75-25 split. I, in the past, have come with a 3 minutes of polished material to try to give you, and this time I think that it was important that I just come and talk to you. This is a very important issue based on the fact that this is our resource. This resource belongs to the citizens of the state. The citizens of the state have a desire to utilize it and could almost utilize it 100%. Are we asking for that? Do we want to do that? No. Are we trying to drive commercial fishing from our waters? We're not. But we have a citizen base that has the ability to go after the shrimp resource and a great desire to go after the shrimp resource. And it's time for that to happen. It was said that we didn't have interest for the last years and we haven't come forward. We've been told for years now that the process would come down to allocation. And when the allocation process was put on the table, you got the citizens to come out and to serve on the advisory committee as volunteers and to put forward a plan that was in the best interest of the people who care about this resource the most. We're not callous to the plight of the commercial fishing industry. We're not trying to push them out or to take out of their pockets. But on the question of what will this do to the commercial industry, the question should be, what has the commercial industry actually done to the recreational sportsmen of this state? We've given up such a large portion of our opportunity for the interests of so few. The time has come for the trends to come back to the recreational sportsman. It's our resource. We want to use it. We pay to use it. We pay for the biology reports. We pay for the enforcement at the time. We put thousands and thousands of dollars for every shrimping day that's open into our local economies between gas money and bait and launch fees. That this resource should be in our hands. I think the advisory committee from the recreational side has left open a large portion of the shrimp still there for the commercial interests. And we also took into account that they already have a 90-10 split in the non-spot shrimp allocation. They have 90% of our state's resources for the shrimp that are non-spot. That's a significant amount. So I would ask you to really look around at the citizens of the state who own this resource, just through their citizenship, who want the opportunity to utilize this resource, who frankly don't get the opportunity for the minimal days on the water. And go with the 75-25 split. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Larry Kaminsky. Okay, Mr. Harrod.
I'm Merle Harrod, and I live in Linden, Washington. I represent the Bellingham PSA, and I'm on the state board. I support the 75% recreational and 25% commercial split. Last year, we only got 6 days of shrimping. I shrimp with a guy out of Blaine. He's got a 23-foot Grady White. We're running down Georgia Strait, and May can have some inclement weather, which makes going down Georgia Strait a little on the iffy side sometimes. And we've gone probably when we shouldn't. The other problem, usually we shrimp on the southwest side of Susha. The tides can run really hard in there. And pulling 400 feet of rope when the tide is running is really an interesting situation. And so we need better choices of days to go out. Last year, several of the shrimping days, the good tide time was like between 5 and 8 or 9 in the morning. Guys were going out at 4 o'clock in the morning in the dark to get out there in the shrimping beds by 5. And that's not real good either. I'm a safety officer for United States Power Squadron for Washington. So I'm definitely involved in boating safety stuff. And one thing that happened last year, we were out there, the water was smooth, but tide got to running really hard, and I was very involved in a boating accident that happened. Three guys were in a 17-foot Boston Whaler, and due to the tide, they flipped their boat. One of the guys had a heart attack when he hit the water, and we had him in our boat for over 2 hours. And probably none of us should have been trying to shrimp in those kind of conditions, because the tide was probably running 2 or 3 knots. And what happened to him was the pot was stuck on the bottom, and he tied the pot to the back of his boat, and the tide swung him around so that the rope was 90 degrees to his boat. He hit the gas, and it flipped it all in one motion. And so anyway, safety is a big deal out there, and we need better choices of days that we can go. And so I'd like you to support the 75-25 split. Thank you.
Michael Bitterling?
I'll pass.
Okay. Evan Anderson. Okay. Mr. Kaminsky.
My name is Captain Larry Kaminsky. I'm a U.S. Coast Guard Master 100 ton. I came out here in the 90s, retired from Colorado, and one of the reasons is I wanted to, I kind of got into the salmon fishing passion. Thought I'd go down to the Keys, but I really fell in love with this area, so I moved out. I opened up a charter business, and most of my customers were executives from out of Washington, and I was forced to shut down when they kind of cut back on the halibut days out in La Push, and they pushed us offshore 40, 50 miles. And it just didn't work out to be able to bring customers in, only fish a few days. You just couldn't cover the cost of your operation. So I got out of the business, and now I just fish for fun. And all I can say is that what happened out on the ocean is pretty much what's happening with the shrimp. You can't get people to go out those specific days. I don't care about how big or small their boat is. They want to get out. They're going to do it. That's what happened in La Push, and several people died. So you have to take that into consideration. Now, the thing that bothers me is when the commercial gents say that we're not really smart enough to lay proper traps and all that. You know, you got guys like John Martinez that have online videos, tell you what equipment to use, tutor you pretty good. And I would think somebody that invests the money in a trap and that, they're going to follow that. So I won't buy into that, and I don't like it when industries are protected by the government. This is a state resource, so you should think of that. And, you know, the bottom line is you could go up to Canada, which last year I didn't fish here. I just got tired of the crowds. So my wife and I went up to Saturn Island, dropped our pots, and we get 400 in possession, and we got our 800 shrimp, and we went back, and we came back the next day, and we got 800 shrimp, and I was done for the season. So here you have a country at 7-8 miles from our border where you're allowed 200 shrimp per person per day, 400 in a possession, and we have these gents here saying, well, we want more, 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 when in fact, when I shrimped here, I wasn't getting any more. I was fighting to get what I could get with all the crowds. So thank you for your time. I would hope you would support the people that pay good money to fish in these waters. And there's a lot of them, and those dollars should not be looked at as, well, a bunch of dummies that are going out there to lay these pots and denying these gentlemen their living. They're going to make their living, or they wouldn't be in it. We know that. 16 of them don't make their living. All right, thank you so much.
Thank you. Jim Ernest? Hey, Mr. Anderson?
Good morning, Madam Chairman, Commissioners. I'm Evan Anderson. I live in Port Ludlow, Washington. I'm a retired fishery scientist and manager, and I'm also an occasional sport fish, shrimp fisherman. And I've been a member of the Recreational Shrimp Advisory Committee. I would like to quickly go over 4 points. First, I support the split that the recreational committee has advised, 75-25. Second, the greatest value to the state from the Puget Sound spot shrimp comes from its use by recreational fishermen, just as the Puget Sound coho and Chinook salmon are. Third, I think the commission should reserve the spot fishery in the Discovery Bay part of Region 3 and Regions 2, 4, 5, and 6 strictly for recreational fishing. And fourth, I believe the state should allow for a quota cleanup by the commercial fishery in any region where the recreational fishery has not achieved its harvest quota and there's still enough to allow a small commercial fishery. Thank you.
Thank you. David Lutz.
I'm Jim Ernest, and I'm a resident of Poulsbo, and I'm a recreational shrimper. I support the 75-25 split recommended by the recreational committee. First point I want to emphasize that was brought up a little earlier, a little off topic as far as the quota, but for safety, I'd like to encourage a little more flexibility in the setting of the shrimping days and shrimping hours to be more compatible with the tides so that we don't encourage those higher flow rates in the water. Second point, I support the 75-25 split because I believe it benefits the larger community, both from an economic impact to the general local community and also to the state. I don't know if that goes directly into the WDFW or to the state general fund, but at any rate, through the sales of licenses is a much better impact for the state. And lastly, just for the benefit of generating experiences and memories for family and friends. Thank you.
Thank you. John Martinez. And Mr. Lutz.
Hi, my name is David Lutz, and I'm just here representing myself. Really just here to voice my support for the recreational advisors quota. I'm a sport fisherman. I can't get my wife to go fishing with me, but she loves shrimping and crabbing, and it's one of those activities that she can participate in with me, with my two young children, 11 and 15, and it's something that we all look forward to every year in the spring. It kind of gets the fishing season going, and they're tickled to be out there. And when they were very small, we would do it out in Hood Canal. Now we do it in Puget Sound. And I see that all over. I mean, all you have to do is go to any of the sporting goods stores around the state, particularly around Puget Sound, or the boat ramps at the beginning of shrimp season, and you'll get an idea of what the participation is like. It's a family thing. The boats are filled with people, kids, and I think that's a value to the state. Certainly the dollars coming into the state are significant, what's being spent. And I just would encourage you to consider that number and provide that resource to the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Lawrence Buckland. Okay, Mr. Martinez.
Hello, my name's John Martinez. I'm owner and operator of John Sporting Goods in Everett, Washington. I have been for the last 39 years. There's been a quantum shift in the money spent by recreational anglers. It used to be salmon, trout, and steelhead. The number one item that's spent by recreational anglers now, measured by license sales and recreational dollars spent at our store and through suppliers and other stores in our industry, is shrimp is number one now. Crab is number two. Salmon, believe it or not, is number three now. And you can evidence that by just our bottom line or by license sales. License sales on the opening day of shrimp that week are up about 25%, as opposed to opening day of crab and salmon in Puget Sound, which occur on the same week. So it's a pretty significant amount, albeit that halibut also opens the same week as shrimp. But there, it just shows you that there's a lot of economic value to this. And I saw some of the economic numbers put on the screen today. $45 to go shrimping, not even realistic. It's probably more in the range of that might buy you bait, maybe. I would say it's between $200 and $500 per person to go shrimping. That's if they go with a very modest amount of gear. To go salmon fishing, it's $80 to $150 to go on a trip nowadays. And for crabbing, it's between $40 and $80. So there's an enormous economic benefit to this. And I'm also a person that's put four people through college through my small store in Everett, Washington. All children worked at my store. So, you know, it's all of us, not just the commercials. There's another side of the story too. It's the retail industry and the industry that supplies the recreational retail industry with equipment. There's a lot of us who rely on this money. We've seen our seasons cut back on crab, and crab's been managed rather well. I like that regime. Our seasons have been cut back on salmon and steelhead and all the other things. So we've struggled over the years. I've been in this long enough to see when salmon was shut down in the late 80s. Now we're down to two shrimp days outside of my shop in Everett. The next stop is one day, and the next stop after that is zero. You know, we're down to two. There's not a lot of stops between two and zero. So what I want you folks to do is take a look at this, make a wise decision. I think the recreational industry is not looking for too much, but we need to have some balance here. But the number one thing that we need more than anything is we need certainty. You've done it on crab. You supplied us with the season. You've given us great certainty in that. We can buy the stuff. See, we're buying the stuff right now for shrimp season. We're laying out huge dollars for stuff that's going to be spent in May. Thank you.
Thank you. Gabe Miller. Okay, Mr. Buckland.
Well, I want to thank you folks for allowing me to have the opportunity to speak, and most importantly, that you initiated this review process and allow us to come here and go through this review with you. My name again is Larry Buckland. I'm from University Place, and I'm representing Puget Sound Anglers Gig Harbor and its 200 member families. Family, I think, is the important thing in this issue. I'm going to step aside from what I wrote and say I really like the process here. I was actively involved in the crab. Some of you may recognize me for better or worse. Allowing both sides to present to you the advisor groups really is a great process. So that said, I'm not going to go through a lot of my prepared stuff because they already presented it to you. The board for PSA Gig Harbor enthusiastically supports the 75-25% because, and we've gone through all these, but just to reinforce it, it's maximize recreational opportunity, maximize revenue both to the department and to the state as a whole, and safety. Those were the three things I wanted to talk about. John mentioned the cost. I will agree with that. I've been in his shop a number of times. I decided 3 years ago to get into shrimping and bought four pots with all the gear. And in my advanced years, I will not pull 400 feet of line manually. I continue to pull my crab pots out of the skiff, but I bought a puller. So I'm into this thing $900 to $1,200 bucks. I think shrimp right now is still $4 a shrimp, as I've tried to portion that out. The $43 that you saw up here is in 2006 dollars. I brought that to your attention on the crab. It hasn't been changed. It's still not realistic. It's probably over $50 with the CPI adjustments for 2012. Mr. Childers added some language about in-season adjustments, and I would suggest that that's probably a good idea. I don't have a problem with that at all. However, I think there needs to be some language in there about how if one user exceeds, and the other user's season is shortened, that the, how the department would go about remedying that in future years, the compensation. I'd like to see some language that at least alludes to that, because there is no remedy language in there. And finally, if I may, I was in Biloxi, Mississippi with my wife's family last month, and an FYI, shrimp was coming off the boat at $4 a pound in the round. So it has much higher value in a recreational setting here. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. John McKay? Okay, Mr. Miller?
Chair Wecker, members of the commission, I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. My name is Gabe Miller, and I'm the fishing and marine buyer for Far West Sports in Fife, Washington. We have two retail locations, Outdoor Emporium in Seattle and Sportco in Fife, as well as our wholesale division, Sports Service, that helps keep shelves stocked in approximately 200 accounts across the Pacific Northwest. Our company employs about 200 full-time employees that are offered full health care and retirement benefits. We've helped sponsor countless fundraisers and derbies at churches, local fishing and hunting clubs, and national conservation groups. We strive to play a strong role in giving back to our members of our community. As with any business, we've seen our ups and downs. One of our biggest successes as of late can undeniably be attributed to the recent policy change in regard to Puget Sound crabbing. These changes have had huge impacts on us and other local businesses. Here are a few examples of some successes we have experienced in the past couple years. When the crab policy was changed, we saw an immediate increase in participation, which has led to double-digit increases in crab gear sales. Not only does the crabbing category benefit from participation increase, but increased sales are also noticed in marine, fishing tackle, coolers, and many other items customers may buy by simply being in the store. As history has shown us with the changes that have been made to the crabbing season, an increase in shrimping opportunity would lead to an increase in participation and, as a result, more dollars to the till. For every day that Puget Sound is open to shrimp retention, we see approximately $100,000 in increase in weekly sales that we would not otherwise see. And it's not just our retail stores that will be benefiting from the allocation increase. We have seen almost a 20% increase in the amount of crabbing-related items going through our wholesale division since the policy changes have been made. The effect of the expanded seasons doesn't just create new customers, it expands the purchases of all customers. The economics are felt throughout the state, and I'd like to share an example from the industry. Bomac Enterprises in Sumner, Washington manufactures recreational shellfish equipment. Thanks to the change in allocation of crab, their business activity has been up 25 to 47% in the past 5 years. In that same time frame, their company has gone from one full-time position to three full-time positions and two part-time positions. The subcategory of shrimp gear, however, has only shown single-digit increases through that same time period, despite the huge surge in sales in mainly crab gear. An increase in shrimp allocation would have the same effect they saw in crab gear. In closing, I'll leave you with this. The success stories I've shared with you show how past allocation shifts in crabbing have led to huge sales increases for the future. It's my hope that you will see the opportunity we have to create another huge success story for our industry by giving the sportsmen of Washington State an allocation increase for recreational shrimp. Thank you.
Steve Thornelly? Okay, Mr. McKay?
Yeah. My name is John McKay. I've been a commercial shrimper for 39 years all over Puget Sound, and the originator of McKay Shrimp and Crab Gear on Hood Canal. I think that rather than look at it economically, this is a public resource that we're talking about. And traditionally, there's been about 3% of that public that owns a sport boat and fishes for the shrimp. There's maybe 97% that then, of those that want to, of that 90%, 7% that remains are those that can and do eat shrimp. And in a sense, I'm here representing them. The commercial fishery is an access point to that greater public. And those ratios haven't changed. So for that reason, we should maintain the 60-40 that we're at right now.
You know, the we've worked very closely and expanded the fishery, so the amount of shrimp available to the public has increased with conservation in mind. In other words, the commercials have worked closely with the fisheries department to expand the fishery as conservation allows. The state is obligated by law to provide for the economical viability of the commercial fishery, and the fish taxes that we collect are contributing to the fund. And so that's basically my point.
Thank you. Steve Thornley here?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, that concludes the public hearing portion of this agenda item. Thank you all. You did an excellent job. Thanks to the panel for preparing those lengthy comments. Unfortunately, we have limited amount of time this morning. We have our meeting with the governor coming up. Has anyone signed up for the open public input? Okay, then we can dispose of item 11. And we can adjourn, go into recess until, we'll be back here at 2:15, but we meet with the governor at 1:00.